discussed to speak on church finances, and I know many of you heard a lot of the history of Antioch and what's happened here. I want to just, as we begin, share one thing that's happened since 2 years ago when we spoke on the same topic. We, beginning of this year, actually completed the purchase of this building. And at some point during the our time together, if you want to hear more details of that, but we were able to purchase the building without debt. And it's been a monumental event for us after 10 years of leasing the space and going through some gyrations with being thinking we're going to be here and not going to be here and the possibilities of changes. We are here and we do now own the building. That has necessarily shaped a lot of my opinion. If you were part of this time a couple of years ago and you heard some of the things that we were saying, you say, gee, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Looking back in that direction, I recognize where the Lord continues to grow us, and I hope he continues to grow us in our understanding of church finances. But just in a nutshell, what we wanted to do is take the overall, when you say finances, it's kind of like I took a class in college and the guy just said, this is a class in economics. And he threw a handful of money out into the classroom. And all these college seniors are wandering around looking on the floor for pennies and dimes. And you're saying, you know, what can that possibly be? And then he drills down into the topic and it's really about economics. And so when we say finances, there's a big picture, but just a couple of things as we start and look at this idea. If you're a member of a church that's an old church, it probably has a lot of this already established. If you're looking to establish a new church or you're part of a newer fellowship, this may be helpful. Probably as we look at the financial part of the puzzle, I think one of the things that's for us as a body, we eased our way into some of these understandings. I was not at the very beginning of Antioch Church, but I came a few months after the church began. And so over 25 years ago, a lot of this stuff has just kind of become part of our church culture. But nonetheless, I think whether a new church, an old church, a beginning church, an established church, it's always great to review. And it's been a great experience for us as we've taken ownership of this property to review a lot of what we see involved with our finances. I think for a church, any church body, like some of the other fellows have used in the business analogies, when you start a church or you're beginning to think about that, is to establish your financial philosophy. And for us as a church, we know that all of the dollars, just like everything else involved with the church, belong to God. And even, you know, if you've heard many talks about tithing on an individual level and giving and financial responsibility on an individual level, we see that we as individuals are only stewards of what God has provided. And that's certainly the case in a church setting. We are certainly only stewards of what God has provided for us here. But because of that, we're called to a desire for excellence in our stewardship. And certainly because of all the negative things that have happened throughout church history with involving money, because it's so easy to see, so easy to recognize, I think it's important that our, in particular with our finances, that we do strive for excellence with our finances on a church level. So just like we're good stewards with our people, our time resources, we want to be good stewards with our money resources to bring honor to the Lord. And I think that as we establish this financial philosophy for a group, if you've got, you know, two or three guys getting together and say, we want to start a church, that to me is the beginning point to say, okay, what is it that we want? How do we want to be good stewards? And for us as a church, even in our fledgling days, the first thing we decided was, you know, how do we want to handle money? How do we make financial decisions? Well, back then it was real easy. We didn't have any money, so it wasn't, you know, really hard. If we wanted to do something, Mark would call up and say, you know, we got this great program. We want to, you know, do this. We want to do that. We got to do blah, 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 and say, okay, well, how are we going to pay for it? Well, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And if there was money there, then that became a real benchmark for us. We knew that if God provided the resources, then we would be able to move ahead. Now, we realized, and of course, that's a kind of simplistic view, but when we started off, we knew that we really had to make some decisions. And we said, well, do we want to do it by congregational vote? That didn't seem appropriate for us. We said, okay, do we want to just have the leaders, the elders, or the elders and the deacons make decisions? Do we want to have a financial committee? Do we want to set up a budget and never vary from that budget? You know, all of these different mechanisms were there. We ended up seeing that, especially in our fledgling days, because finances were real limited, we would let the elders make the financial decisions. And then, we had to decide, we've got, you know, five elders. Is it going to have to be a majority vote? Is it always got to be at least three saying we're going to spend this money? How far are we going to drill down to do that? Are we going to, you know, from paper clips on up, does it have to be $100 or more? You know, who gets to make those choices? And in those early days, we ended up saying, okay, let's make sure that the elders are in agreement. And we said, is that a unanimous agreement? Everybody has to be on board cheering, you know, hooray, let's spend this money. And frankly, early on, that was pretty much the criteria, because things were so limited. We said, let's make this a unanimous decision. And throughout the years, that has been our trek. We've seen that if we have three elders and one has a check in his spirit about a project, we step back and wait. Sometimes we've got, with five elders, we say, okay, well, you know, one or two of the guys say, that, you know, I understand what you're saying. It seems like a good thing. I really don't have a strong opinion about that. And so we stop and we wait. Sometimes I think that is frustrating to Mark. I know, because Mark's a, okay, here's where we need to go. Let's, you know, put the guys in the car and drive off and go do it. And for some of the rest of us who say, well, you know, I haven't done anything like that in 20 years. Why do we need to start now? That kind of mentality. But I think the Lord has really provided for us over the years to see that for our leaders to be in agreement without any serious disagreements, that we see how he has blessed that. That begins to drill down into some of the other areas where we start saying, okay, well, you know, what else do we want to do? Well, for us as a church, again, we decided that early on that we would not go into debt. We didn't have a credit card when we first started off. Everything that we did was kind of a cash method. I'm an engineer, not an accountant, and it used to frustrate our accountants, because I'd say, okay, in my mind, we got a box. Beginning of the day, you throw all the money in the box, and you make change out of the box. You spend money, you put some money in, you take some money out, you go through your day. At the end of the day, if there's money left in the box, you made a profit. And the accountant said, oh, no, that's not the way you do it. You can't, you know, you got to have some depreciation. You got to have a little of this. You got to have some sales, you know. I said, okay, but I'm just telling you, if there's money in the box, we did good today. If there's no money in the box, you got to stop doing whatever it is you're doing, because you can't do any more that day. Somebody's got to get some more money and put it in the box. And frankly, that for us was the starting point. We said, no debt. And when we started, after 10 years of being on a college campus, we started looking at places that we might consider to buy. The first thing that when we started talking to the folks that own this building, they said, go ahead, go to the bank, get a loan, and we'll sell you the building at such and such a price. And we felt like that really wasn't the way God would take us. We'd been 10 years with this no debt philosophy. And all of a sudden, here was this opportunity, this great building. It's near the college campus, a lot of space. It's fit our needs. And we said, well, we just can't do it. And they said, okay, well, we're going to sell this building and put some apartments up. Somebody wants to build some apartments. We're going to make a bunch of money, and you guys are going to be out. So we started looking around. You know, we looked at different buildings around campus. We looked at a couple of campus bars. You know, they're going to be there on Saturday night. We'd be there on Sunday morning. And so we tried a lot of different things. Fortunately, that idea did not fly, by the way. But God continued to bless us. So establishment of this financial philosophy, I would encourage you as you look, if you're in a situation, we all have seen how debt can wreck individuals and individual families, and we've seen how it can hurt churches as well. So I would encourage you to consider the no debt option, I call it. After establishment of this philosophy, I think the next most important thing as you look at the financial picture is to find godly men to run the financial program. You've got to put men who understand finances, men who understand how the business works. But I think even more importantly, the criteria that we try to use is the same criteria that we use for elders and deacons from Titus and from other places in Scripture. You know, are these men above repute? Are they a good reflection of the gospel? Will you let them not only manage your finances, but the other parts of leadership in the church? Now, that's not to say that everybody that's handling the money has to be an elder or has to be a deacon, but I think in a smaller context, that's a good starting point. We move through that, and as we look, one of the criteria is that we find people of integrity, people with discretion, and I use that. That's kind of a two-edged sword. Jeremy will share a little bit about that. First, people who don't run their mouths. There's a lot about giving, a lot about money that does not need to be discussed. And at the same time, there are things about finances that do need to be discussed. There needs to be a real transparency with the body about what's happening with their money. Our people give money. They bring it to us. They entrust us to be good stewards, and we're responsible for communicating to them that is what is happening. So on the one hand, you don't want somebody saying, well, gee, Mr. Jones just doesn't give enough money. Let's squeeze him a little bit more, to say something like that in public, or, you know, even in a small group and say, look, we got to go after. You know, you want somebody that's not going to say that kind of stuff. But you also want somebody that's going to be able to communicate what God is doing and giving God the glory for what's happening with the finances. So real quickly, the philosophy, then the people that are in place. And I'm going to add one. As these responsibilities grow, I think capabilities come into play too. As I said, I'm an engineer with some accounting background. Jeremy's an engineer as well. Sometimes as we continue to grow in this experience, we constantly are calling on the CPAs in the body and saying, you know, what do we need to do here? How do we handle this stock transaction? You know, that's a little bit different than some money in a box, okay? And as we continue to grow, there may become a time when this part of the puzzle needs to be handled by a CPA, as opposed to just some guys that have accounting experience. So capability becomes a factor there. And also, I think gifting becomes a factor there, because all of these parts of the puzzle fit together with somebody that has the right giftings to be able to communicate as well as to do the job to serve the body effectively. After that point, setting up a system of accountability, I think, is important to put together a system that works for your particular size body. And again, as you grow in size and stature, generally accepted accounting principles are the best way to go. One of the primary things that we started off doing and we still do is that Jeremy handles all of the money that's coming in. He handles all of the gifting, receiving, and as far as keeping track of what each and every family gives. He handles that every week. I handle the outgo. I know who gives. but not on a first-name kind of basis. Jeremy understands where the money goes through our reporting procedures. So, but I think it's important to have a divergence there so that the same person that's taking the money in is not the one that's dispersing it. I think it's important to have adequate reporting with your finances because, again, there needs to be a transparency with the body to establish that trust. We don't tell, you could ask many people in our body, they don't know how much we spend on paper clips. They don't know how much we spend to clean the carpet. They just know that they entrust their funds to us. If they ask me, I can tell them. And I'm certainly not opposed to, you know, as people, different members of the body come and we are able to share the specifics that they need to do. I think it's important to be transparent, again, with the body. So the biggest thing is to hit the balance there between communicating what needs to be known and what doesn't need to be known. And I think as I finish up my portion here, one of the things that we're seeing, and you probably all have experienced it in one way or another, as the climate in our country continues to change, the financial reporting responsibilities continue to change. Now, obviously, if you're a nonprofit corporation, you know, you've got to file your 990s and do all of the government reporting. In addition, if you have properties and stuff like that, you've got to have the appropriate permits and all of that sort of stuff. So I think it's important for us to keep the information and to be diligent to have everything that the government requires, whether it's the federal government, the state government, the local government, because I don't think it's going to get any easier government-wise. We know that that continues to be the squeezing of what's happening in our churches is going to continue to happen. So it's important for us to maintain good records. It's important for us to report accurately, and it's important for us to dot the I's, cross the T's, and take care of the information that the government asks of us, because it's going to get tougher and tougher. And if we have these systems in place, it'll be much easier. I just want to mention a couple other things along those lines. Once you have these different the plan to handle your money in place, it's important, you know, to with your bank accounts, with your stock accounts, if you have any of those, to set up an insurance plan. We've learned an awful lot since we moved from some guys that rented a grocery store and had church on Sundays to business to property owners. And again, that insurance part of the puzzle is more complicated than just some liability insurance. So in case somebody slips and falls on the playground, right now the liabilities, the exposures for not only accidents and outside activities, mission trips, and conferences like this, softball teams that you sponsor, you know, all of a sudden, you know, in the American society, we're so litigious, you know, you've got to have protection for everything. So it's important to find a good insurance provider that can talk to you and understand some of the things. You know, one of the big things that our provider's been really focusing on, you know, do you have protection for the counseling advice that your pastor gives, that your Sundays, or that your teachers give, that your home group leaders give, that you say, and, you know, I'm thinking, what's he talking about? He says, well, you know, if Mark says in a sermon on Sunday morning, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. And I use that example because of Mark's eye situation. And, you know, a visitor to the church comes and he says, you know, boy, I'm a bad person, and rips out his eye. And then, you know, his family member comes and he wants to sue the church. He said, the preacher told me to rip my eye out. And, you know, I just did what he said. And all of a sudden you've got a suit. Now, that suit may or may not, you know, a judge will say it doesn't have merit, but you still got to go through it. You still got to, you know, the legal aspects of it. So it's important to have that kind of insurance mentality that we're not just trying to protect some property. We're not just trying to take care of some stuff. We're taking care of people, not hard assets only, but people in general. So I know that's a quick flyby, but I want Jeremy just to share just a couple of things about how we do it specifically. And then certainly we're available for questions and answers throughout the rest of the conference.
Good afternoon. So just a couple of practical issues. Dick covered very well pretty much the history of Antioch. Every fellowship, whatever church you're with, whatever group, however you're organized, everybody's going to have a different way of doing things. So when I'm saying practical issues, it's not a one approach or one size fits all kind of thing. But just the way that we do it, Dick, as he mentioned, he handles all of the outgoing. So anything that's spent, he writes the check, makes the payments based on the elders' agreement on that. My role is pretty much just to take in receipts. So every Sunday or during special events or special giving, I'll do all the collection for any of the giving that's made and then fill out the deposit slips and go to the bank and make those deposits. Because I'm doing all the receipts, at the end of the year when we have our elder deacon meeting to look at the year past, I'll also put together financial statements, just some general. What I've been doing is some general trending the last few years. There are statistics. We're in a highly statistical society now, so there are statistics on giving in the U.S., average church, the giving status. So we kind of compare and contrast, do a little bit of that in our leadership meeting. So as leaders, you know, we can not make everything about the numbers, but we can kind of see some trends. And one of the things that we talk about every year is there's never a push to preach any messages about giving or to make any pushes or pledge drives or anything like that. You preach through Scripture, and there's plenty there about giving. So just had a discussion about sermons. And so as you go systematically through a book, there's going to be issues that come up on giving naturally. So, but from the practical standpoint, that's what we do. Deposits go in, and then Dick would write checks as they go out. And so on a given Sunday, you know, just afterward, I'll collect everything, and then usually that day I'll make the deposit, fill everything out, and then usually on Monday or Tuesday, make the deposit into the bank. So, it'll work differently for whatever body you're in and whatever your leadership group is like. So, you know, that's really all I need to say about the practical part. From the standpoint of being a leader and handling finances in the church, I would say that the most difficult part, I probably shared this last time, but the most difficult part is knowing what everybody in the body gives. We usually don't make a whole lot about that, but for the people that are in those positions, it's a prayer every week. The only prayer that I pray every week about finances is that God would help me forget everything that I just wrote down. And that's pretty much a weekly thing because from my standpoint, it can affect your fellowship. And in the body that we're striving toward unity in the body, what we're doing in leadership is equipping the saints for works of ministry and service. And so the biggest danger is to not be unified in what we're doing. And handling the finances, recording the giving, knowing what everybody gives is there's a great potential there for danger, for looking at someone differently when they come in, for treating people differently because they either give a lot or don't give at all. So I would encourage wherever your system is set up, and we have when I took over doing the receipts, there was a list that was given for the practical parts, and then also on the back were some scripture verses about giving, and the issues of integrity and charity are very important. So I would encourage you, for those that are starting a new church or if you're in one and handling finances, that you go over sort of regularly with those that are doing it, the importance of having a very short memory as far as that goes, so that there's no strife or issues. I mean, ultimately, what anyone gives is between them and the Lord, right, whether they give it all or not. And we also don't know people's personal philosophy. There may be people who give outside to local charities and see that as equivalent to the tithe. You can have discussions about that, some pretty robust discussions about that, but we never know what someone's personal philosophy is, so that's always between them and the Lord. So that's a good way to think about it. So it's about 4 minutes till time to leave or move on from this one. So I think that's all that I have to say. Dick went over most of the rest. So if there's questions about finances or the nuts and bolts, how you particularly set it up, yes. When I'm doing the counting, thanks, Chris. Yeah, the question was for me, when we're doing the collection and making the deposits, do we have multiple people counting or just one? And then the other is in the outgoing, do you have an audit, a yearly audit for all of the outgoing? So the way that we've done it, I've never had someone else check behind. Our reporting measure is I'll go through and count it. I always count everything twice. And then I send Dick a copy of the spreadsheet. We have a spreadsheet weekly that we fill out. Let me back up. We record in three different places. We have the physical deposit slip that we give to the bank and then keep a carbon copy. There's an Excel spreadsheet that we fill out that I turn in through email to Dick that he keeps records of. And then also I write the totals. The gross totals, not specifics, but just the numbers. Here's what we had for this week, and send that to Mark as the elder that keeps track to put in newsletters and whatnot for the giving. So, but no, we don't. There's no second party. And I think we talked about this last time. Is and Dick kind of spoke on it in terms of the integrity and the whoever you put in that position. You know, you can put two or three or four people. And, you know, you can have three people that put those things together and collude. So however you want to do it, if you have enough, you know, if you have enough people to have multiple people counting, if that's something, you know, for accountability, to have multiple people counting and get the same numbers and make sure it's all right, we just do just the one. That's the way we handle it.
Yeah. I think, Chris, you know, when we started off early on, we could look at that box and I could say, you know, that's a $200 offering. You know, so that it wasn't necessary. And at different times, we've talked about having multiple people handle the income. And in the same way, we've never had an audit on the back end. I've had people come in and, you know, they want financial reports and they look over them, you know, different accountants, different people in the body. That as we see the complexity of what's happening here, in particular with the property, an audit certainly wouldn't be out of the question. You know, we haven't talked about that specifically. That's one of those things where we say, gee, wow, that would be a safe thing, not only because anybody doubts what we're doing, but to protect Jeremy and me as a protection. Say, yeah, we've got this information audited. So I think that's wise. Yeah. One of the things I mentioned just in the time, as we drill down on some of these, you know, this beyond the philosophy, one of the things that we did establish at the very beginning is that Mark, as the pastor, the primary communicator, doesn't handle any of the money. He's not responsible for knowing who gives. He doesn't get the report that says who gives what. Doesn't make financial decisions by himself. Now, we'll tell you that we have a credit card now because of the way life has evolved in our society. When he has to do stuff on the internet or something has to happen, we do have a credit card, and it brings with it its own set of complications and problems. But again, we established this pattern of trust early on. I knew that Mark wasn't going to grab a $100 out of this imaginary box that we have and go spend it all without talking to me about it in the very first weeks. And now I know with a credit card, he doesn't need to grab any, money out of the box. He could spend with the credit card. But we know he submits all of the receipts at the end of every month, and I go through and check them off. And if it's something that's, trip to Jamaica, when do we do that? I don't remember a mission trip about that, but I'm only kidding there, of course. But part of that is that trust has been established. And I think that's part and parcel as you build these systems. If you have a system that has been established and it continues to breed that trust, I think that's fantastic. That really, and like I said, we're evolving at that point. Thank you.